What's up, everybody? Welcome to Beyond the Norm, episode 6, talking all things improv comedy, business of comedy and entertainment, and that kind of stuff. So what is going on? Kind of interesting meeting that I had yesterday. I think it was interesting. Why am I qualifying it? It was an interesting meeting. So I'll back it up a little bit, right? One of the things that I've been obsessed with, just in terms of the comedy industry and entertainment for the last couple years, but in the last year, it's really starting to kind of come together to a degree. So I'm all in on China. I'm all in on China, right? I mean, it's to me, I've been saying that for years. I'm like, China's the place, right? And we have so I've been kind of cultivating that. We had the good fortune of doing some work in Shanghai and Beijing at the very end of last year. We're going to be in Shanghai at the end of this month doing some work, again. And so I've been really trying to look at that. And my whole point behind China is that, you know, as you look from an entertainment standpoint, or I guess any business standpoint, right? But I look at it from entertainment. I'm like, well, where is there a need for this stuff, right? Where is there a potential burgeoning demand for our style of Western creativity and things of that nature? I think we've talked about it before, and it's not me saying this, right? This is kind of, you know, the general thought process on China is they're an immense community or culture or industry of being able to replicate, right? They can kind of take anything. They have the technology, the manpower, the know-how to take whatever and replicate and make it. Their next iteration in their own culture is to create and create on their own. And the companies or the people that can work with them to develop their own creativity, I think, are going to be invaluable. And we're already seeing that, right? Mm-hmm. That was our theory. But now we're starting to see that they're bringing us in, because that's kind of the next step in that culture is to not replicate, but to create on their own. And we're starting to find some pretty cool traction on that. And my thought, you know, was always like, well, look, you know, here in the States or whatever, like, not that there's not a need for this, but this is... improvisation is now a commercial product, right? Whereas in China, this is mind-blowing, right? When I was there I gave a talk, and, you know, as I said to them at the time, their whole thing, right, in the talk that I gave, was they wanted to learn how to be more professional. And how do you be more professional? And what I told, you know, what I said to them is, like, don't worry so much about that. What they have there is the opportunity to write their future for the next 50 years. Where here in the West, you got to fight for kind of set pieces that are already out there. So I think that that's super exciting for them. So I'm kind of all in on China. We're doing a bunch of stuff. And I had a really good meeting yesterday with a company called Deal Moon. And Deal Moon, you know, they're probably that's not what we are at all, but I'm going to try to describe what it is. I always feel like I describe them like, that's not who we are.
Yeah.
But Deal Moon, it's essentially a commerce place, an online commerce platform geared towards the Chinese market that's here in the United States. So, they're become more and more of a Chinese audience clientele here, and they do a lot of cool things. And they do it all around the U.S. But they do this very cool thing. They've done it 3 times now, where they have an authentic Chinese street food festival, and they bring in all, you know, just super authentic Chinese Shanghai, Beijing, whatever street food. And they did their last one on July 4th. right? I'm like, that's pretty. Talk about counter-programming, right? Yeah. They did it on July 4th at the, whatever the mall is now up in Chestnut Hill. I think it's like the Simon Collection.
Oh, yeah.
Something like
that.
So they're working with that. Sold 1,500 tickets.
Hmm?
Like, wow. And that's fantastic. And so we're talking with them. I had a meeting with them yesterday about, you know, doing some very specific events for the Chinese community, be it around entertainment, possibly Chinese Mandarin specific language improv classes, all kinds of things.
Yeah.
And you know, whatever comes of it, I don't know, but that's what excites me from a sense of like, yeah, how do we think differently about what it is we're doing?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because, you know, be it here in Boston or in New York when we open, of course I can offer improv classes, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, but that's another coffee shop essentially opening up. And maybe they love your coffee, maybe they love that coffee, but it's ultimately it's coffee, right?
Yeah.
Whereas, what if you offer the first thing out of the gate is Chinese language improv classes. Nobody's doing that.
Oh yeah, that would.
That's.
I feel like you'd have like people, just a group of people who are like, this wasn't here ever.
Right.
Now it is. Here we go.
And that's where my mind goes, right? Yeah. It is to where do you, and you've heard me say it before, right? But where do you zig when everybody else is zagging?
Yeah.
Right? Because the zig and the zag, if you just keep zagging with everybody when they're zagging, you're all going to end up in the same place.
Right.
And then you have to battle for your small piece of this ever shrinking pie. Whereas when you can go, oh, nobody's doing that.
Yeah.
It gives you something very new, and so it's good for business, yet it also covers what I talk a lot about too, which is it's good for that intellectual curiosity, right? Mm-hmm. Like, how do you know how to do this? Well, no, you learn how to do it.
Yeah.
How did you know, why would you take improv classes if you didn't know how to do improv? Why would you, no, you figure out how to do it. So, So that was a pretty cool meeting with those folks from there, and we're talking about and some stuff that maybe I'll talk about on some other episodes because I want to wait till it gets closer to fruition, but some pretty big stuff. So,
that's cool. That's really cool.
So it's pretty cool. Within that kind of intro then, we were going to talk about the fecal flood of 98.
We were, yeah.
Maybe I'd rather change that up and actually, because I think that dovetails a little bit more into how I feel currently about the training landscape and performance landscape of
yeah,
improvisation.
I can see that. Yeah,
I think so. So here's my thesis statement on this.
Yeah.
Right. I believe currently, as it's constituted improvisationally in the U.S., people are overtrained at this point and underperformed, and I think it's coming up to almost an epidemic proportion on this.
Improv is an epidemic.
It is, and when I say this, it's I'm almost arguing against, and we've talked about it before, right?
Yeah.
Against my own business, but man, here's the thing, right? I feel that at this point, as we talked about, improvisation has been commodified by companies like mine, Improv Asylum or UCB or Second City, to the point where it's almost strangling the evolution of the art form a little bit. And what I mean by that is when I came up, when I started, it was really not much any different than stand-up comedy. You find places to perform and you learn how to do this.
Yep.
Just like you learn stand-up performing. Yes, there's huge value in the classes and things of that nature. I think though, because some theaters, their primary business model is classes.
True.
And is not performance and selling tickets to shows,
mm-hmm.
What that will then tell you is they are completely incentivized to keep you in classes.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. If that's your primary business model, if you are a improvisational training center and that's your main business, where do you want them?
In the classes.
In the classes.
Is that based on, like, you look at other theaters, their ticket prices are, like, lower, so because it seems like you go to like a UCB, it's like, oh, it's always packed, but it seems like a lot of the clientele are students.
Well, a place like UCB, it's a huge clientele of the students.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
not. And again, I can hear all the comments. Blah blah blah. I'm not saying there isn't a general audience that goes to UCB. Of course there are. I'm not
yes.
an idiot, right? But the majority, or at least a very large portion of it, by design.
Yeah.
Because if you're a student at UCB, you have to go see shows. I mean, it's mandated, right? You have to go to your classes and you got to tell them the shows you went. So
yeah.
I mean, I'm not making this up. They require it. And the reason that they do that is their business model is predicated on the revenue from classes,
mm-hmm.
not the revenue from shows.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Whereas a place like Improv Asylum's business model is predicated first and foremost on revenue from shows.
Mm-hmm.
Same, I think, with Second City is very much like that as
yeah.
well. And so what I find I feel like I'm piling on here on UCB, though I do believe that they're kind of the reference point that I would make on this, but this goes for all of the training centers, right? At some point, everybody that's out there that's doing improv and that's doing this stuff, you've got to stop taking classes,
yeah.
and you've got to go perform. You have to. And so I can already hear people like, but the only way I can get stage time is taking classes at Theater X in City Y.
Yeah.
What I would say to everybody then is go find another place to do shows that isn't an improv theater. Mm-hmm. You know, I get it. It's wonderful to do shows at purpose-based places.
Yeah.
Yeah. But when you're starting out, you actually kind of shouldn't be there. You know, you should be at other places and work your way up to that, right?
Yeah, like you have the goal. I mean, I do think there's an element of if you are trying to get on the house teams here, mm-hmm. right? If you want to get in the scene here, you kind of have to go through it. Well, it's designed where you go through the system. But I think the bigger part of that is more... maybe it's not what you're getting from the classes. It's more who you're meeting and being around. And now you're in the group, so then you're in this scene
there's
or whatever.
No question, yeah. Right? You're being in the scene, and there's absolute value on that.
Yeah.
I would counter, or I would argue, is that once you're trained up, because you got to get trained. You got to get good. I'm not saying that you don't. But once you're good,
yeah.
Well, you can, like Improv Asylum, for example, you can continue to audition for as many house teams as you want once you graduate. There's no prerequisite that you have to be actively in classes.
Yeah.
You have to be until you graduate.
Correct.
But once you graduate, so be in the scene, come down,
yeah.
and go learn and get good doing other shows. Because what will happen is when you get good doing shows at other places, lo and behold, you'll get better. What happens when you're better? When you audition, you'll get cast.
Yeah.
When you get cast, you're not part of the scene.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Right? So yeah. Don't be a part of the scene to hang around. Be part of the scene because you're good and you're supposed to be part of the scene.
Yeah.
Right? My point is, if all you do is take classes for 15 or 20 minutes of stage time, even at best,
yeah.
even at places like Improv Asylum, even at best, even if you're on the top house team,
yeah.
What's your set?
Yeah.
20 minutes? 30 minutes?
Yeah. It's funny. I was having this conversation with my buddy who's getting back into stand-up. And he's like, yeah, you know, I'm going to go to this open mic, and then I'll probably go to this one, and then next week. And I was like, okay, would you trust a doctor who only did doctor stuff, like, 1 hour every 2 days? You know what I mean? I'm like, no, you got to do it so much more.
Absolutely.
And so, yeah, I think that class is the component that helps you still get in the scene. But if you're not performing outside, if you don't have an indie team, if you're not getting outside direction for your group, it's like
if you're not getting outside direction, and then I would even back off on that, go find places to perform, like the hideout.
Yeah, but I don't even think they do.
But
yeah.
But my point was, when they were doing those shows I was always like, great.
Yep.
That's what you need to do. It's not one or the other, it's everything.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
You know, you've got to figure out ways to perform. And like, well, I don't know how to do it. Well, you know how you do it. You go walk around.
Yeah.
You go walk around.
Yep.
You go wherever city you're in. Okay, if you're in Boston, you're like, I think there's a good audience in Austin, Brighton. What I would do if I were 22 mm-hmm. is I would go to Austin, Brighton, and I'd spend a couple days just walking around.
Yeah.
And invariably, you're going to run into someplace where like, I bet you could do pretty good shows there. Mm. And then you walk in and you go, hi, I'm so-and-so. Would you be up for talking about doing shows here? And invariably, someone's going to go like, yeah, what do you got in mind? I mean, there's no secret to it.
Yeah.
It's shoe leather on the ground and you do it,
yeah.
right? You put it together like that because there's no replication for performing.
I mean, that's what I was trying to tell some of my classes. They were like, what do we do now? You know, we signed up for level 2 or 3. And I'm like, it's not mandated, but you guys are already a cohesive group somewhat. You guys should go outside and go to, you know, the hostel, perform,
mm-hmm.
but more so, you're very bad because you're very new. And as long as you're okay with being like, we're bad, go out there, be bad, so then you can learn and get better.
And I think that becomes what is very frustrating, I think, for me about improv. You see it a little bit in stand-up, but stand-up gets to it much faster.
Okay.
Because stand-up, you have somebody like, I'm funny. And then they go to that open mic, and they're immediately punched in the face, and they're going like, oh, this is going to take a long time.
Yeah.
And then that weeds people out, or you stay with it, and you get caught in the bug. The thing that makes improv so great is, oh, I got to mess with my phone. My phone is broken, so I can't turn the
light
off. So you're going to keep getting messages. And my wife, Kelly, just sent me a text, and it just says, fuck. And it's not nearly as erotic as it sounds. It's because there is a flooding issue in our basement, and we have to have all rugs taken out and everything like that.
Well, maybe we could dovetail into fecal flood at some point. Oh, that is a nice that's thing. Serendipity.
But going back to what I was saying, the same thing that makes improv wonderful is the thing that I think creates this false sense of where people are at their skill level by way of performance, right? Because you take classes and it's like people fall in love with it because it's super supportive, right?
Oh, yeah.
You're doing awesome. You're great. There's no mistakes. There's no wrong way to do it. And you're like, and you're in these cocoons.
Oh, yeah.
And by the end of your classes, you're like, I am pretty good.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and then
it's definitely the after grad show high.
Yeah. And even a grad show, right? And you feel great. But a grad show is designed for you to not fail, and an audience is there only being supportive. It's friends and family, and they're cheering you on for six levels of work that they know you put in. They're not even really cheering you on for that scene you're doing. Yeah. So you walk out of that, and you're like, I've done this for 17 months.
Yeah, yeah.
I know what I'm doing. I had an amazing grad show. I got a standing O. And then you go try to do it live, and you suck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're supposed to.
Yes.
We all suck. And when you suck, as you're supposed to, right? You need to go in places that allow you to suck.
Yeah.
Right? And the established theaters only can let you suck so bad.
True.
Right? They're not designed to have you be at rock bottom or a little bit above.
Yeah.
And so you need to go get that experience, because what will teach you the fastest, and I've said this before, it's not a guru improv teacher. It's not a highly acclaimed director. It's the pain of sucking in front of the audience when you go like, oh, I thought that was funny. Everybody hates that.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do that anymore.
Because it's for, I feel like the only way to get better is to find out what works specifically for you and what you're true to. You know what I mean? It's like, I told this to somebody where I was like, look at Mark, right? Mark O'Connell. There's moves and there's things he can say that fly in the face of all the teaching. You know, somebody could lay out this beautiful thing and you go, no, that's stupid. And like negate and shit on the person and get a huge laugh. And it works because that's who he is.
And beyond just getting a huge laugh, right? Because we know we can get laughs through negation. We know we can get laughs from throwing our scene partners under the bus. And that's a good example. Yes. He has an example of, and even through that negation, he's still being supportive of his, he's still working in the other stuff that is needed.
His character. But then you see somebody, a young person who's like coming up, they see that and they go, oh, I can do that. They try it and it falls flat and they don't know why. Right. And it's because you don't know what works for you. You have to try everybody else's method until you find out, oh, mine's an amalgamation.
And you have to do it in front of audiences that don't give a shit about you. Yep. They don't know you. They don't care about you. They aren't supporting you. They're not cheering you on.
Yeah.
If anything, maybe they'd rather see you fail.
Yeah.
If you want to start looking at this from a professional place.
Yes.
Right? Yep. And that's why I've said before, like when I came up, you know, these places like Improv Asylum or Established Theaters didn't exist. You did them just like the stand-up clubs. You found places. You found bars.
Yeah.
And then there became, and it's this derogatory term, and everybody knows this in the improv world, right? Oh, they're doing bar prov, right?
Yeah.
And it's said like that. Fuck you. That's exactly what you should be doing. And if you're doing bar prov, you should fucking be proud, and you should lean into it, because any asshole could go down to Improv Asylum on a Saturday night at 7:30 and find success.
Yep.
They can. Right? You're doing it. No. Okay. But you know what I mean, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of hard to screw up a 7:30 Saturday night show.
Yeah.
Show me that you can have five people in a shitty Irish bar be like, hey, that's pretty funny.
Yeah.
That is so much more powerful.
Yeah.
And that's where you need to be. But instead, we get elitists, right? And we get like, oh, they do bar prov. They're at a hostel. Yeah. Fuck you. Those are the people I'm most excited for.
Yeah.
Because they're the ones that are really learning and getting a certain amount of work in that will then translate when you're ready for these theaters, and that will really speed you along.
Yeah.
You know, I always say it when I first got to Boston, and you know, I'm auditioning and doing various different shows, and I think I had said that I was part of the for a very short lived time, the worst name improv troupe, Colonial Jesters. So bad. Colonial Jesters. It was so bad, both the name and the group, that honestly that was the very very catalyst seed to Improv Asylum, because I met Paul D'Amato during that audition, and myself and Paul and a couple of people, we were quickly like, oh my god, this is horrible, let's just go do our own thing.
Yeah.
And that led to us doing shows at Hard Rock Cafe, and that led to all these other things. But Colonial Jesters. But I remember rehearsing maybe it was Colonial Jesters, or maybe it was when we started getting ready to do shows at the Hard Rock Cafe. We were at the Kells. We were able to, which is an Irish bar down in Alston, and we were rehearsing like on whatever Tuesday nights at the Kells in their back bar that wasn't open, but it was.
Yeah.
And no lie, this is how you should all come up. We should all come up. We would rehearse, and drunk Irish guys at the bar were heckling our rehearsals.
Oh my god.
I mean, you want to have to talk pain points. You're doing spacewalks and all this stuff, and like, what is that shite? Shut up in there. That ain't funny. And you're trying to mirror and do all this stuff. So, man, that'll teach you, right? But I think that to me, and what I mean by we're overtrained, is at some point when you get good, when from the basic fundamentals, you got to go perform.
Yeah,
you have to do it, you know. And so I do the little numbers game. I don't know if I've done that in the podcast, but the numbers game I teach, right? Which is everyone's like, well, you know, whatever. You know, I'm paying all this money for classes. I'm like, okay, this is assuming that you've gone through, you've graduated more or less from some program.
Oh yes,
doesn't make a difference. No. Okay, and then I have people say, well, I gotta keep taking classes with organization X so that I can be in the scene, that I get my stage time or whatever. I'm like, I'm like, well, let's play a numbers game. Okay, so let's say, all right, what's the average cost of a like an 8-week class? And I think if you average it out amongst, you know, different places, let's call it 300.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sure. Some are 4, some are 6, some are 2, but let's be on the low side, 300.
Yeah.
Right. So that's $300 for a class, right? And how many people are typically in a class? 15.
Yeah,
11 to average 16.
So I like round numbers. I'm not very good at math. So let's call it 10.
10.
Okay, because it's easier to do the math that way. So that's $3,000 for that 8-week course, right? $3,000. So just use like 4 more levels. Right? You know what I mean? Because once you graduate, they're like, well, now there's senior advanced grad level 205, where you learn the same fucking shit that you learned 3 levels ago. It's just you're paying for it again, right? Mm-hmm. So let's say there's 4 levels. So 3,000 times 4 is $12,000, right? Let's round that one up a little bit. Let's say there's 5, because then they're going to make you take a musical improv class you want to take. Okay, so German operatic improv. Good for you. Niche is great. So let's round that one up. So that gets us to $15,000.
Yep.
And so what I say to people is, could you put on a show for $15,000? Could you put on a run? Could you find a venue for $15,000 and do your own thing? You bet your ass you can.
Mm-hmm.
If you walk into a venue and you say, will you give me 3 months of your venue for 15 grand on Tuesday nights, you're gonna have people falling over themselves. But instead, what you do with that $15,000 is you give it to people like me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we then put it into the infrastructure and whatever, and we create, but at some point, you're losing value there. And also now, you do that if you're in Boston or if you're in New York or LA, especially, you know, those kind of media towns. Also, now you got 3 months. And now when industry, right, because that's the other thing, well, I got to stay here because industry comes and sees it, bullshit, right? Now they're going, well, what is this thing going on at X? And they're going to come right to see you.
Yeah.
And it's such a better investment, but nobody thinks like that. They just keep giving them to people like me, or all these other theaters, where you could be investing in yourself there.
Yeah.
And it's such a better investment. But I'll tell you right now, if somebody wants to come to me and say, I'll give you 15 grand for 3 months on a Tuesday night, I'd listen to giving you a Tuesday night in New York at Improv Asylum.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's guaranteed money for me.
Yeah.
But nobody thinks like that. They think, well, I can't afford to put it on. You can. You can if you think industrious like that and you put your money there.
Is that something, I mean, obviously for the podcast, but is that something that would be advertised in a way?
Well, not necessarily, because I say that I would potentially do it. On the other hand, I already do it for myself. Like,
true.
I'm investing in myself on those nights.
Yeah.
But at some point, if somebody were to come in, because it's usually the opposite, right?
Yeah.
Usually somebody comes in and says, I have a really great show. I'm really funny. Can we do Tuesday nights? And we'll either do it for free, or maybe once we get good, we'll do a split. And eventually, I have to say, like, well, then I weigh that against, well, I can create shows.
Yeah.
And theoretically, because I've been doing this for 20 years, odds are that I can create them better and faster than you.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Right? I mean, it's not an arrogance thing. It's any of the theaters can. Yeah. That's their business. Mm-hmm. That's what all these theaters do, right? So then you say, well, why would I, no offense, but why would I commit to that when I have a zillion other people that I work with that I know are great that I can just do, right?
Yeah.
Whereas, if you were to come in and say, I'll give you $15,000 for Tuesday nights for 3 months. And I said, well, now I'm listening.
Yeah.
Right? Nobody does that.
Yeah.
Right? Because they don't want to invest in themselves. They want other people to invest in them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like I told I said to my daughter, my older daughter, Chloe. So there's in my town, this is Duxbury Music Festival, happens every year, right? Mm-hmm. And it's nice, lovely New England music thing, gentrified on the lawn. It's very boring and great.
Yeah.
And so, but they always look for volunteers. And so kids 15, you know, high school students, freshmen, whatever, starting to, you know, looking to do those things. So they're looking for volunteers. And so myself or my wife's like, oh, you know, you should do this, sign up to be a volunteer. And her first words out of her mouth, kid after my own heart, really, was like, am I going to get paid? And my answer was, I'm like, absolutely not. You have no skills that have any financial value for anybody.
Yeah.
Like, no, you don't. Like, you have no skills. You can't make change yet. You don't know how to park car. Like, go volunteer, get the skills, and then you get paid. It takes people so long to recognize that, like, why aren't I getting paid for shows? Because your skill set isn't up to value of paying you yet.
Yeah.
It's just not. And nobody likes to hear that. I've been doing this for 17 months. I've been working so hard for 24 months. Oh, have you? Yes, I take classes. How many nights a week? Once.
Yeah.
And I do my 20-minute set, and sometimes I do a practice group.
Yeah.
Like you said earlier, like that's not how lawyers and doctors work.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, and I guess if you just kind of look at like just college in general too, like you leave college, you expect to get a job, and it's that thing of like, well, we need you need 5 years experience, and it's an entry level job, and it's like, well, how do I get that? And I feel like it's that thing of like, well, you just went to school, so now you have, you know the lingo, but you have zero of the skills unless it's something that you had to actually do because you haven't done it yet.
And you also, you know, we live in this bubble, right? And look, I was no different. Like,
yeah.
I'm not speaking from like, because I know. The only reason I know is because I was the asshole that made all the, you know, all the same assumptions and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But you come out of, so you see, you see it even more out of college improv, right?
Yeah.
Look, you're in college improv. By the end of your college career, you're a college campus rock star, right? I mean, everybody loves you. Mission Improbable or My Mother's Fleabag.
Colonial Jesters.
Colonial Jesters. Oh, what a show that was. So good. We make them laugh. And so you are, right? And you think, well, I'm ready to go. And you come out of college and you audition for these professional theaters. And you can't understand why you're like, oh, yeah, you're a college improviser. You have so much more to learn. And like, well, no, I've been doing this successfully. Yes, to your college, to your very specific peer set.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're just starting out. And we come into this when you're first starting out. What you don't realize, like, you're seeing it at eye level.
Yeah.
What you're not seeing is all those people that put in 8 years up here. Are they supposed to be discounted?
No.
Just to let your brilliance of 17, 18 months of work in, right? And it's fun to watch it switch, right? Because at one point, and you know, you're on that end of it. You're like, I'm ready.
Right.
And I've always said, talk to me in 7 years and see if you're still saying the same thing. Because you're going to be going like, why is that new person coming in? I've been doing this forever.
Yeah.
Right? So there's always that push and pull. But it's developing the skill set by getting on stage and getting getting the experience, because the difference is you can accelerate your experience, and the way you accelerate it isn't by taking more classes.
Yeah,
it's by getting on stage everywhere. Mm-hmm. When everybody else is getting on stage once a week for 20 minutes, you go get on stage 3 times a week for an hour at a pop.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden now you, unlike, let's say, being a doctor or a lawyer, you actually can accelerate and speed up your experience level.
Yeah.
So you got to go do it. And you know, I get it. Everybody's, it's all supportive. Yeah. Go do bar prof. I want to see that come back in a huge way.
Maggie's Lounge.
Yeah.
And then there's
the team I'm on has been to Maggie's Lounge a bunch of times.
And then there's the hostel. What else is around?
Nick's? I think that's stand-up.
That's stand-up. They don't really do improv. But what was it? It's not done anymore. What was the Asian All-Asia? They used to do stuff over there down at Fenway, the All-Asia Cafe. But that was big for a while, maybe a little bit before your time. But the point is, if you want to do this, go willing to do it in a tough environment.
Yeah.
Because if you can do this in a tough environment, when you step into these theaters, you're going to be like, oh my God, this is the easiest thing in the world.
It is, yeah, it is a little like training with weights on, you know, because I feel like that if you look at something like The Hostel, it's like if you can make that group laugh, that's a group of international people. Mm-hmm. Some of them don't speak English.
Sure.
But it's lost in translation.
Yeah, but if you can get your comedy to translate across them, then when you come down here to a safe environment, for the most part, everyone speaks English, it's like, oh man. This is much easier than that.
Of course. Yeah. And if you bring your Chinese improv group to The Hostel.
Oh.
Yeah. Wait till you see what I'm going to do with China, man. but it is. Like, it's overtrained. I think it's one of the few art forms that are out there right now that are, it's improv is wildly overtrained. Because it's a business model. That's it.
Yep.
That's it. You really don't, once you graduate these programs, you really don't need the, well, now that you've graduated it, there are 4 more advanced master levels. You don't need them. You don't. I mean, you may want to take them because it keeps you fresh or whatever, and I understand it. I'm not knocking it if that's your choice. But what I'm telling you is you don't need them.
Yeah.
What you need is stage time.
Yeah.
That's it. You know, go do that.
I find that you can see it. I was just at the house teams, and there was a couple of people who really, I was like, oh, I haven't seen you before, and you're so funny, and this. And then I find a little bit more about them, and it's like, oh, that person does X, Y, Z, you know, whether it be stand-up or another art form thing. I'm like, oh, they're getting that, and they're translating it to this. So it's not all, I'm just, even I'm all doing improv, because I think you have to diversify so you have something to pull from for your improv.
Well, you do, and this is, again, coming from a very specific angle of being professional and doing this as your career, right?
Yeah.
It's not coming from the, no, I actually love being in classes because I love the community and I'm doing this as a, well, then, yeah, take all the classes you want if that's why you're doing it, for that fun, supportive environment. I'm not knocking that.
Yeah.
If you're looking to be professional, you're not going to be a professional improviser.
Mm-hmm.
You're not. What you're going to be is a writer, actor, producer, technician. That's what you're going to be, right? I mean, you'll be on Second City's main stage for X amount of time. Then you're moving to L.A. or Hollywood. You're trying to be a writer or a sitcom actor or whatever, or a movie actor. So you're not going to be that. So I say this all the time. Great. Instead of taking another improv class, go do stand-up. Scare the shit out of yourself and figure out how to be on stage alone.
Yeah.
Go, okay, I've said it before, and I'll probably say it a million times again, but I'm really serious about this. If you're kind of nervous or afraid to do stand-up, go to the Moth.
Yeah.
Go tell stories at the Moth.
Mm-hmm.
You'll never have a more sympathetic audience listening to you than at the Moth. And because you've done improv and performance, by definition, just because you're not going to shit your pants when you step on that stage, you are going to look so much more polished than all the people that are shitting their pants when they go tell a story. And it doesn't matter how good or bad your story is. The Moth, the NPR crowd, doesn't matter what you say. They're going to go like, that's really good for you for getting up there. Really nice. It's not going to be anything. But you're learning to do this by yourself. You have to do that.
Yeah.
If you can't do this, if you can't present by yourself at some point, it's going to be very difficult. Because, you know, I know not SNL, right? That's the thing, right? The biggest thing where ensemble performers, you go and you're like, well, that's the holy grail. And I know some people are like, I don't care about SNL. Okay, shut up. Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, right? SNL, great. Do you know what you do for the SNL audition? perform by yourself.
Yeah.
So what is that master improv class going to do to prepare you to perform by yourself on your screen test for SNL?
Yeah.
Sure, they'll see you in the show, but at the end of the day, that's what you're doing.
Yeah.
Drives me insane, right? So professionally, diversify. Don't, if you're going to take more classes, go take an acting class for camera, right? Go take a writing class. Go take a vocal class. Learn how to play a damned instrument.
Yeah.
You know, go freaking work on a fishing boat and get some life experience, you know, so you have something more to talk about than just inside referential bullshit that, you know, that has no bearing.
Yeah.
You're like, oh my God. So that's it. So I think we're up against it here at the end, but that is my biggest thing. Everybody that's out there, stop taking classes and go find a way to perform. You can do it. It's not that hard. And so if you're wondering, what do I do next? That's what you do. If you don't know how to do it, email me, text me. I'm happy to give you my thoughts or tell you, you know, avenues on how to do it. But there is no secret. Go to an area that looks cool, yeah, where you live. Walk around. At some point, pull open a door, whether it says authorized or not. If it says authorized personnel only, authorize yourself and go in.
Yep.
Find the person and say, would you be up for doing shows? And I guarantee you that within, I'll say conservatively 10, but my guess is within 5 venues, you'll have at least one person say, yeah, I'd be up for that. I guarantee it. All right.
Cool.
So good. All right. Well, that's good. I got to figure out what's happening at the basement of my house. It doesn't look good. So I got to check that out. But as always, please, if you like this episode and leave a comment, good, bad, or indifferent, we'll set you up with 2 tickets to one of our shows here in Boston or in Improv Slam New York or in Shanghai and Beijing or wherever the hell else we're doing shows. It doesn't matter what you say, good, bad, or indifferent, but we will get you those tickets. Great to talk to y'all. See you soon. Be on the norm. Goodbye.